Ever feel like you're drowning in case law as a law student, trying to figure out which court decisions actually matter? You know, the ones that really set the rules for your client's case.
Yeah, it's a lot to wade through, especially, when you're trying to understand who even gets their day in court. And when the legal system says, nope, been there, done that, it all boils down to precedent.
Exactly. And today we're going deep on a Supreme Court case that really wrestled with those limits of that day in court idea.
That's right. Richards v. Jefferson County, a 1996 decision. It's one of those cases that every law student should have in their back pocket because it clarifies a crucial intersection: individual rights versus procedural rules. This is where it all comes to a head.
Absolutely. At the heart of it, we're looking at due process, your fundamental rights, going up against this legal principle called res judicata. It's also known as claim preclusion, and basically it asks, when can a past ruling prevent you from bringing your own case, even if it's a similar issue?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? This deep dive is your crash course in understanding where those boundaries are, why it matters so much that everyone gets a fair shot. We'll cover the background, the legal arguments, the whole nine yards.
We've got the story, the Supreme Court's answer, the reasoning, all laid out for you.
So let's jump right in. What makes Richards so important? Well, it really sits at this crossroads of your constitutionally protected rights, specifically the 14th Amendment, that guarantee of due process. And on the other side, the states need to have efficient and conclusive legal systems.
Right, they can't be trying the same cases over and over forever.
Exactly. That's where res judicata comes in. It literally means a matter decided. It's meant to prevent the endless relitigation of the same disputes. But the central question in Richards is this: when do those state procedures, those rules they have to take a back seat to those big fundamental federal constitutional rights? When do they have to yield?
That's a good question. So let's set the stage. What happened?
All right, so back in 1987, Jefferson County, Alabama decided to implement an occupational tax.
Okay, new tax, always popular.
Fast forward a few years, and you have two county employees, Jason Richards and Fannie Hill, who are not convinced this tax is kosher. They file a class action lawsuit arguing this thing violates their 14th Amendment rights, specifically due process and equal protection. They also bring up some claims under the Alabama Constitution.
So they're saying, hold on, this tax steps on our rights.
Now, here's where it gets really interesting. Jefferson County's main defense, it wasn't actually about whether the tax was constitutional or not. Instead, they pointed to a previous case, Bedingfield v. Jefferson County, decided by the Alabama Supreme Court. And in Bedingfield, they had upheld this very same tax under state law.
Oh, so they're saying we already settled this. The state's highest court said it's fine. End of story.
Exactly. But there's a catch, and this is what sets up the entire conflict. Richards and Hill, they weren't a part of that Bedingfield case at all.
So this prior ruling was made without them even being at the table.
Right. The folks who sued in Bedingfield, they were a different group of taxpayers, and even the city of Birmingham itself. They weren't representing all county taxpayers, not in any official capacity.
I could see why Richards and Hill would be upset. Hang on, we weren't there. We deserve our own chance to argue.
You got it. But the Alabama Supreme Court, they didn't see it that way. They invoked res judicata, that concept we talked about, matter already decided. They said Richards and Hill's claims were barred because the people in Bedingfield had, quote unquote, adequately represented all the county taxpayers' interests, including Richards and Hill.
So they lumped them in, even though they were never part of that first lawsuit. That brings us to the big question, the one that landed this case right on the steps of the Supreme Court, didn't it?
It sure did. The question was, did the Alabama Supreme Court go too far? Did they violate the 14th Amendment, specifically the due process rights of Richards and Hill?
By saying, too bad, you're stuck with a decision you weren't even involved in.
Precisely. And the Supreme Court, their answer was a resounding yes, unanimous. They held that, using res judicata like this to block Richards and Hill, absolutely violated their due process rights under the 14th Amendment.
No question about it, huh? So how did they reach that decision? What was the logic? What were the legal building blocks?
Well, a major case they leaned on was Hansberry v. Lee, back from 1940. That case established a huge principle. You generally can't be bound by a judgment if you weren't part of the lawsuit, or if your interests weren't represented by someone who was.
So you can't be held to a decision you had no say in.
Exactly. The Supreme Court in Richards looked at what the Alabama court did through the lens of Hansberry, and they found three big, big problems.
Okay, let's break those down. What was the first issue?
First, there was a lack of adequate representation. the Bedingfield case. It wasn't a formal class action lawsuit. And that's important because class actions have safeguards, procedures to make sure that everyone who's not physically in the courtroom, their interests are still protected.
Because they're part of the class, mm-hmm. but not directly arguing the case.
Right. And the court pointed out that there's no sign that the folks in Bedingfield even thought they were acting on behalf of all the other taxpayers.
So it wasn't like they stood up and said, "We're here for everyone in Jefferson County who pays this tax."
Nope. No formal statement, no notice given to other taxpayers, no way for them to make their voices heard in Bedingfield. The second problem, Richards and Hill had absolutely no notice, no opportunity to even participate in that prior litigation. They had no clue this lawsuit was going on. They couldn't present their own side, their evidence, their arguments about why they thought the tax was wrong. And the Supreme Court was very firm on this. People are entitled to their day in court to fight their own battles.
It does seem unfair to lose a legal fight you didn't even know was happening.
Right. And that brings us to the third point the Supreme Court made. The Alabama court had taken res judicata too far. Just sharing a general interest in this case, both sets of plaintiffs paid this tax, right? That wasn't enough to create automatic, adequate representation and bind the folks who weren't even parties to the first case, especially not when constitutional rights are in play. The Supreme Court was careful to distinguish, you know, general gripes about taxes versus direct attacks on their constitutionality.
So saying, "Hey, I don't like how this money is spent," is different from saying, "This tax violates my constitutional rights."
Precisely. And there were a couple of really powerful statements the Supreme Court made in its reasoning, things that stuck with people.
Anything we should be quoting in our law school exams.
For sure. They said, "A judgment does not conclude the rights of strangers to the proceedings," meaning a lawsuit is mainly about the people who are actually involved. And they drove it home by saying the Bedingfield plaintiffs were mere strangers to Richards and Hill, really highlighting that disconnect, that lack of representation.
So, zooming out a bit, why does Richard still matter today? Why should law students care?
Because it reaffirms something huge, your right to due process, your right to be heard in court, especially when you're claiming your constitutional rights. Richards put a limit on how state courts can use their rules, like res judicata, to shut out people who weren't even part of a previous case from making their own constitutional arguments.
So, let me see if I get this straight. If someone else lost a similar case before, that doesn't mean everyone else with a similar complaint is automatically out of luck.
You got it. Especially when we're talking about constitutional rights and the people bringing the new lawsuit weren't part of that first one. Richards tells us a loss in court doesn't mean the door is slammed shut for everyone else. It highlights how much our legal system values individual rights.
This feels really important for us future lawyers. What should we absolutely remember from Richards?
A few things. First, know the difference between res judicata, which we've been discussing, that's barring an entire claim from being tried again, and collateral estoppel, or issue preclusion, which is about specific issues of fact or law. Richards is all about the boundaries of res judicata. Second, just because you share an interest with someone in a past lawsuit doesn't mean they legally represented you. You're not automatically bound by what happened. Third, remember the supremacy clause, big one. Federal law, including your constitutional rights, trumps state law, including their procedural rules. And last but not least, when can res judicata maybe apply to someone not in the first lawsuit? Due process usually demands they were named in the suit, they agreed to be part of a class action, or their interests were genuinely actively represented in that prior litigation. Richards shows us how high that bar is, especially for constitutional rights.
So if I'm understanding Richards correctly, it's saying due process puts a check on res judicata. People have the right to bring their constitutional claims to court unless some very, very specific conditions are met, like really proving someone else properly represented their interests in a prior case.
Exactly. And that makes you think, doesn't it? How does that idea of adequate representation work in today's world? Think about those huge class action lawsuits where everyone in the class might not have the exact same goals or fully understand what's going on, and for practicing lawyers. If your client has a case and there's a similar one that was decided before, you can't assume they're automatically blocked. You have to really dig into that old case. Who were the parties? Was your client involved? If not, was there good reason to say their interests were already represented back then?
So precedent isn't just, has this been decided before? It's also, who was involved in that decision?
Exactly. Because the right to be heard is a cornerstone of our system. Rules like res judicata keep things running smoothly, but they can't bulldoze over those fundamental rights.
Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Richards v. Jefferson County. Hope you all have a better grasp on this decision and its impact on due process and res judicata.
As you continue in law school, keep thinking about that balance, efficiency versus everyone's right to their day in court, especially when we're talking constitutional issues. How would the Richards principles play out in new situations? What does adequate representation really mean in the 21st century? Lots to ponder.